We can go ahead and get started. And before we get started, open us up in a word of prayer. Father, we thank you for this opportunity again to learn what it is that you would have us to learn. We thank you for your knowledge and your wisdom, and we ask that these things that we learn today about technology, we take them forth to enhance and grow your kingdom. It's in your son's name we pray. Amen. All right. So today, day two, we're going to continue talking about the iChurch method, and today we're going to focus on just social media because that is a hot topic. And we're going to talk about how to utilize social media online for ministries and all that good stuff. And yes, yesterday I talked about some of the resources you have available, the iChurch Method books, and I have a few books up here in case you guys wanted to purchase any of those. Again, iChurch Volume 1, Volume 2, and then the social media book where we just talk about just social media. And then also... another thing, in case you want to check it out online, then there's the website for the book online and that good stuff. Now, again, my name is Jason Kasten, and I think we have a few people who weren't here yesterday. I work with a large ministry. We have our Facebook fan page is about 1.8 million people. Our Twitter account is about 1.2 million, I believe. And YouTube has we got over a million plus views, and then we're on Pinterest and Google Plus and Instagram and just a variety of networks that we utilize for the ministry. So the main thing that I wanted to do was talk about the strategies that we utilize to grow at that rate, because when I got to the ministry in January of 2010, they were only using Facebook, and actually they weren't using it. They just had a Facebook account up just to have a presence there, and there was a couple hundred Facebook fans, and I think Twitter had a few hundred just off of just putting something up, and then we weren't using any other social networks. So what I did was I asked them, would you all like to utilize or do you use social media? And the leadership at the time didn't understand social media, so they were kind of more so like, whatever it is you want to do, just to keep you quiet, we'll let you go do it. I was hired to be a web developer, and so I was supposed to work on the websites, but you know, I saw the importance of social media. So they let me run with it for about a year, and then we saw exponential growth in that year, and then we built a team around it. And now we have a team of all of two people and a writer, so we got three people total that talk about or really implement the social media. And then we have all the higher ups and all the newfound social media experts within the ministry that want to put their hand in the pot, and so therefore we have quite a few people that give input on the social media strategy. But it's continued growing, and my main focus for getting involved in it was to help the church take ministry to the people on the networks that they're using, and that's what's happening. So I'm excited about that.
So you have a specific person dedicated to the copy?
Yes. Yes, we do have a specific writer. Yes, and also too, you know, I don't mind ask questions while I'm going through it. You don't have to wait to the end or anything. Ask questions as soon as you think of it. I forget stuff if I don't ask it right then, and I don't expect you all to hold on to it till the end as well. All right, so let's go ahead and get through this. Again, why is social media important to ministry? Interactive, two-way conversation. It's a way for people to reach the ministry, faster, immediate connection, immediate response. And again, we want people to be able to be reached right where they are. We want to not restrict them to saying you can only receive ministry from the website or when you come to service midweek, when you come to service on the weekend. We want to make sure the ministry is able to reach them right where they are with the content that they have. The top social networks that we mainly hear about are Facebook with a billion plus, YouTube 600 million, Twitter 500 million. Each of these I put a plus at the end because it's continuously growing, continuously expanding. Social media in itself is always continuously growing. One thing that I do notice though is when I was talking about this before, I had spoken in a lot of places, and I spoken mainly in the United States. So when I spoke internationally, I had to take into account there were some people there that were from China, And they had limited access. They couldn't utilize Facebook or Twitter. That was limited. So they used stuff like Sina Weibo and Qzone and RinRin and stuff like that. And that has hundreds of millions of users as well. And I believe they used, instead of YouTube, they had access to, I believe it was called, I want to say Yuta, I believe was the name of it. But they had different accounts or different networks for their type of usage. In Russia, they use VKontakte. And also Adnak Laknesky, which is different networks that they use also, because their Facebook and Twitter accounts, our Twitter access is restricted as well. And then even so, I just saw that yesterday Iran had Twitter access for about 12 hours, and then that was taken away through of course they use ways to get around it, but the Iranian government was allowing access through their mobile networks for about 12 hours, and then that was taken away.
Iran was big, trying to make a new infrastructure keep everything out from outside.
Yeah, only yeah. Outside Iran. Absolutely. Yeah, and they continue to try and keep it. I think it's kind of like similar to, I want to say, I don't know if it's South Korea or North Korea. I get them mixed up, which one. North Korea, we're keeping all the outside information restricted and only using the internal networks. Continuing on, let's look at with the main networks that we want to focus on for ministry, how much time the average user spends on these networks. And with Facebook, it's about 18 minutes. Pinterest, it's about 14 minutes. YouTube is about 10 minutes. So, and Twitter is 6 minutes, and Google Plus is 5 minutes.
Per day? Yes. Visit or per day?
This is per visit. Per visit. And then also the thing that we want to look at is what I've seen with churches is they don't focus on stuff like Facebook, Twitter, they get that. You know, they don't need to be there, and they may not utilize it as effectively, but they don't think about Pinterest and the type of stickiness that Pinterest has, and being able to tell your story using pictures and video.
Can you give an example of what something like a pin would be for?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
My wife uses Pinterest, and she was always looking at decorations and all that.
Yeah, or something.
Trying to think about what would
a ministry use?
Sure.
Absolutely. First and foremost, first thing a ministry could use, it would be video. So you put videos on YouTube, might be the sermon, might be a motivational moment or something that happened during service, what have you. Put that on YouTube, share it on Pinterest. That'd be the first thing. Second thing, kind of we see on Instagram, they're called motivational memes. That's what it was. You can put those on Pinterest as well, just like you put those on Instagram. So we're just talking about, we're going to talk about content a little later on, but to talk about that, the content that the ministry puts out, and when I talk about the meme, I'm talking about the motivational background with the words over and all that good stuff, the good, warm, fuzzy feeling picture. We can look at these different content that the churches already developed, and just push it out to these different networks for people that may only want to utilize Pinterest. Like my wife is on Pinterest all the time, so it's great that the church has a presence there because she's always there. So therefore, where she's at, the church is at. Okay. Now, talking about a social media strategy. Okay. First and foremost, I want them to understand it's not just set up a Facebook account, set up a Twitter account, and hope they'll come. That's just not how it works. And then getting frustrated with social media as a whole because nobody could find your Facebook page, or nobody could find your Twitter account and stuff like that. But you have to have a strategy behind what you're doing. And first and foremost, everything cannot fall on the pastor. Okay, I've seen churches, especially in smaller churches, the pastor's trying to do every single thing and preach the sermons and lay hands, and baptize, as well as be the social media guru and the IT guy and everything. And it's just, it's really a lot to put on one person. There are tools that you can utilize that will help with your social media strategy. First and foremost, you can use native posting, where you post right directly to the account. And you can use Hootsuite, and you can use BufferApp.com. Now, I usually, at the ministry we're at, we use Hootsuite a lot because we have teams of people that we sometimes give access to volunteers, to let them post, maybe respond on a weekend service, and then we restrict their posts after that time frame. And we also use Buffer. Now, we were looking at native posting because we thought with Facebook and their EdgeRank and their Facebook news feed optimization and stuff like that, we thought that if you posted from Hootsuite or any other third-party type tool, Facebook would limit it. And initially, Facebook was limiting it, then they took it off, then they put it back on. And we know Facebook, you know, they're basically, they don't want you to know what their secret sauce is for their news feed, because that's their money maker, getting into the news feed. And originally, they let everything in the news feed, then they, you know, they realized they had to become a business, and it became about money and advertising, so then they want to limit how many people you could have access to, because then they want to charge you for that full access later on. So Facebook, whether you're posting from natively or a third party, it really does not have it has a minimal effect on your Facebook newsfeed optimization. Okay? Again, and is anybody familiar with Hootsuite here? Everybody use Hootsuite? No? Okay. All right. Well, here's an example of Hootsuite right now, just to give you an idea. But this is kind of what I look at when I'm looking at Hootsuite, showing me what's scheduled out. Is that middle column? This is the stuff that's on the actual Facebook fan page, and the other things that people have posted on there. And then up there at the top right shows all the accounts that I have access to. And I work with probably 3 different ministries in addition to my own pages and stuff like that. So you see a lot, it's a lot going on.
That's the pro version you have, because you can only limit it for 5 networks. It's free.
Oh, yes, the free version is limited. Yes, I use the pro version. I pay $5.99 a month for access to as many networks as I want, me and one other user. And then every other user, every additional user after that initial $5.99 is $15 a month.
So you were saying you have a content writer?
Yes.
Somebody's constantly just coming up with stuff to put out there, listening to what's going on in ministries and thinking strategy-wise, how to put that out there, and then you've got technical guys
who
are actually in charge of putting it out there. Is that how that works?
Yeah, here's the exact streamline process. We got a content writer who's gathering books, looking for quotes during service, and we have a devotional calendar. Grab all that information and just basically make it into the whatever type of network you want to put it on. Put it in those bite-sized chunks. Okay, and that's all. That's what that person does, just for the social media stuff. Usually, the calendar is already written in kind of bite-sized amounts, so we really have that as a resource. But we also get the writer to add additional stuff as well. And then if there's different events that we need, we want somebody to make sure it's written from the perspective of the ministry. Number 2 is the actual tech person that's actually scheduling all this. That would be me. This is, I'm scheduling this every Sunday. Usually I schedule out the whole entire week of devotional posts. I might put some YouTube videos in there and stuff like that. And then, you know, whatever comes up during the day, then, you know, someone will let me know, you know, to get that out. Then we have, there's the social media or our entire team manager. And he's kind of like, you know, talking to the executives and all that, and a different leadership as far as what do you all want to see on social media? What's most important, you know, who's in charge of actually, if we get a question on social media about somebody that's having a real spiritual issue, who's that directed to? They kind of take care of that up top. And that's our entire process. So that's the main three people. And then, like I said, everybody else who, you know, puts their hand in the pot and wants to stir it once a day and all that good stuff.
The Potter's House? Is this the Potter's House?
This is the Potter's House.
A lot of churches don't reply to people. You see their Twitter timelines, and there's no replies.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Does Potter's House reply to people where people can actually see that you have interactions with people?
Yes. Mainly, we do reply, and it's not as extensive throughout the week, but we do reply a lot, you know, during service and mostly on the weekend services. Absolutely.
See, so many churches just,
yeah.
And Jesus would never reply. Jesus would reply and converse with people.
Which is a good point, and I might probably bring this back up in my slides later on, but we can talk about that right now. The one-way conversation is not social media. And it's, for instance, purposes, yeah, it's broadcasting, it's marketing, you know, it's yelling at people. You know, here's what we have here. It's very important you listen to us. Don't talk back, because we don't want to hear what you got to say. That's what it comes off as, a very arrogant social media strategy. And so we wanted to make sure that even though we have, you know, pages that have millions of followers, you know, we get on and, you know, we respond to stuff. The church responds to stuff. Even, you know, Bishop Jakes gets on and he responds to stuff as well, which people don't believe it's him, so it doesn't matter, you know, whatever he says. They don't think it's him. His Twitter account, he loves Twitter, he loves Instagram, and it's all him.
It is him.
So it is. If you get a response from that, it is him. And very few people believe that. So, but yeah, that's him, and he loves that stuff. Once he figured it out, you know, now we have to, you know, pull him in every so often, because it's great when everybody's, you know, being nice. But we all know that the internet is not so nice, and you know, we're like, you know, Bishop Jakes, you can't say that. You know, so some of the stuff that he wants to respond to, we're like, you know, we have the people that, you know, we have to let him know, you can't say that, because what you said to that one person that you're really upset sniping at, that's going to be on the homepage of Gospel Today tomorrow. We really need you not to say that.
So.
Now, not none. Before, at the peak, when it was probably about 5 to 10, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because especially when people get to, because we knew that when it comes to theology, people are going to disagree with his theology, and people are going to go after him with that. And he doesn't mind going back and forth about theology. When they attack his family, that's when, you know, he steps out of, you know, that, well, he's a bishop, but he steps out of his pastor mode into dad mode, you know, provider mode, husband mode, and he protects his family. And so, you know, it is what it is. Yeah, exactly. So we just let them know this is not the battlefield, you know, where you want to have that in front of everybody. Don't fight publicly at all.
So, Jason, do you guys have a separate, like maybe Twitter account that's specifically for contact information, or if you want a direct reply? Like, you might have one for your church as a whole, and then like an @contacts ministry name here or whatever. Do you guys do anything like that?
No, we just have two. Two main accounts, the church account and then the pastor's account.
Okay.
And so, and the church account is for that particular aspect. Yeah. Absolutely. But majority of people, because outside of our local church area, are used to seeing just him on TV or stuff like that, and how they relate to him, they send all the questions to him. And then us who are in their support, we see that and we answer from the church account.
Gotcha.
So. Yep. All right, continuing on, looking at what do church users want in your social media? Again, personality, the pulse of the ministry. They want relevance, how the church and biblical principles are relevant to current issues in their lives. That's a lot of things that, you know, when I'm speaking with churches about their social media strategy, please continue to stay connected to the issues that are relevant in your the people that are following you in their lives. Stay connected. I understand that the things that you want to push out and the things that you want to talk about, but please make sure you stay relevant to the people that you know, that you're ministering to. Okay? Frequency and consistency. I can't speak on this enough. A consistent social media strategy. Don't be you know, very consistent starting off in the beginning, you know, and for 2 months you're the best social media tweeting church that ever existed. And then in that third month, you know, whoever was championing it decides to stop doing it, or the church doesn't, you know, they kind of started out the gate real fast and then it just falls off, because then you lose your initial audience that you built up. So continue to post frequently enough. And, you know, I say 2 to 4 times daily, but we'll talk specifics later on. But like 2 to 4 times daily, I mean, you know, tweeting up to 4 times daily at least. These are just, you know, kind of guidelines you could throw out. But, you know, whatever works for your audience, which you can tell from the analytics. Facebook posts, try and post at least, you know, twice a day. Google Plus, try and post twice a day. One YouTube video, hopefully a day, if not a week. Pinterest, photo pin a week, video a week, stuff like that. Just try and get consistent, and you can build up on that. And then last, information. You know, what's going on with the church? People want to know what's going on with the church without having to log off the network that they're on. So they, you know, they can come to the website, but they want to know, if I stay on Facebook where all my friends are at and I'm talking at, you know, will you push out the content that's, or the events that are going on from the church through the network that I'm on? All right. Now, let's look at our growth. We took a three-layered approach for our strategy, which was inspiration, information, and communication. All right, that was our goal every week. Inspiration, information, communication. Inspiration, starting off, daily devotional, some type of inspiration, start their day and end their day. Information, again, giving them information about what's going on with the church. Other information that's relevant to their lives. We kept the information flow, we kept it coming. You know, that they would always know what's going on with the church, no matter what network they were on, they stayed informed. And then communication, as we were talking about earlier, if you talk to us, we talk back as much as possible. Of course, when you get up to, you know, a million plus people, we can't respond to everybody. But as many people as possible, we respond to, you know. And then also, too, we come across a lot of people on Facebook and Twitter that we have to block. So we've been asked before, what is our criteria of blocking somebody? And there is no set criteria. It's usually when they just get out of line and out of pocket. If they want to, if they're trying to ask a spiritual question, you know, and they may come off a little abrasive, then, you know, we'll definitely address that. We're not trying to ban anybody. But if you just want to argue theology because you're behind a computer and nobody can see you and you just want to spout off about, you know, your theological differences with what we posted, even though we just said, God bless you, have a good day, and that just sent you on a rant, then, you know, we don't want that person trying to, you know, really take over the Facebook post or take over, you know, the Twitter conversation. Likewise, we like when people come on the page, if we post a devotional or some type of event or something, and we like them to come on and encourage other people and talk about, you know, maybe agree with it. You know, this is how, give a testimonial about what we're talking about. We don't want the social media, preacher to come on there and give their long scripture and long sermon that they've been trying to post on every social media page that they've come across, you know, trying to, hijack the post with their sermon. We don't want them to do that. So we delete it, we let them know, and then if they continue to do it, then, of course, obviously we have to ban them. So those are the things that we come across. But for the most part, with our social media strategy and our social media audience, the main things we have had to deal with have just been people who've had differences of theology with our pastor. So specifically, give you guys a specific example we've had to deal with most recently is we had a conference about 2 weeks ago called MegaFest where Oprah came and Joel Osteen came. All right, so we've had, anytime we post anything about Oprah or Joel Osteen specifically, people, we had to deal with a lot of people responding about the theology, Oprah's theology and beliefs, Joel Osteen's preaching style, theology, beliefs, etc., and so on and so forth, which, you know, we knew that that could occur. You know, some of those people can be polarizing in certain aspects, but if it starts to become, you know, something that's very vital or just something that's taking away from the actual post of what we're trying to talk about and inform people about, these people are coming in, the topic we're talking about at the conference, which is encouraging, then we have to delete and ban those people because, you know, we're trying to let them know that this is something we're trying to do that's encouraging, and we don't want to, you know, divide the body with what we're doing.
So you always need one of those post deletions or blockages with a response.
You said, say that again? I didn't hear that.
You always, whenever you delete or block somebody, you always send them out a message.
Yeah, as much as possible. Not every single time. As much as possible. If we delete something, then we'll try and send them a message and say, hey, this is why we deleted it, you know. But we do know, you know, there are instances where some people are just, you know, they're in attack mode, and we can't talk to them at that time. All right. Continuing on. Content is king. So here's the type of content specifically that we look to push out week in, week out with our social media strategy. You know, I'm talking about inspirations, links to services times, live streaming, weekly events, ministry updates. This is the type of stuff we're looking at that we want to push out consistently because this is the type of content that people are looking for. Okay? So this is a good start for you all as far as developing your social media strategy for your ministry.
Also, is a church website, the content that you might post, ever evangelistic in nature? Can it be? Because this will all be just for church and people. Is social media ever used for evangelistic means?
Evangelistic? I mean, what would be an example?
To reach a church. I mean, 83% of America doesn't go to church. So I would say 83% of people on the internet
go
to church. So this will only apply to the 17% of the people that want Christian content. What about the other people? What about the people that were on a mission to reach?
Well, a good example of that would be two ways that um, two two ways that we see that most people who have no desire for church interact with us. And the daily devotionals, again, we're not talking about scriptures. We're talking about actually just probably more so quotes and stuff like that. So I'm not talking about scriptures in general directly. That would be where we reach a lot of people who really, you know, don't want to, they're not feeling church at all. Two would be the events, the church events that we have that people are interested in, but again, don't want to feel too churchy. And that a good example of that would be the Oprah event. So we had a lot of people there who were, church audience, but a lot of people came who didn't have no desire to step foot inside the church. And
do you encourage your Facebook people on your Facebook page? Do you encourage them to share? Because once they share, then it'll go to their timeline. Mm-hmm. And then those are people, 83% of them will be unchurched.
Yeah, and that's what we do is we put a call to action in, and whether it be we ask them to, and it seems like, you know, and I'm not sure the exact percentage, but I want to say I think it's like 30-40%. But you get a higher interaction rate when you put a call to action in there. And, you know, ask them to retweet, ask them to share it, like this if you agree with it, or so on and so forth. And it seems like, with marketing and businesses and corporations, they have no problem putting in a call to action. It's standard. But with ministries, you know, I think I was speaking at a conference before, and I told the gentleman, this is the way we increase visibility in Facebook newsfeed. I said, we put in calls to action. We ask people to do something when they're doing that. And he said, well, we don't want to do that. We don't want to feel like we're pimping the gospel. And I said, I understand your perspective, but we're looking at it more so as letting them participate in ministry with us. So if you're in a church service and the pastor says, you know, which I've been to church service, which says, you know, touch your neighbor, tell him this sermon's for you, etc. I don't look at the pastors, you know, pimping the gospel. I'm pimping the gospel when I tell, you know, just participating in ministry with him. I don't want to preach your sermon for you, so I don't want to, you know, do all that stuff all the time. But, I don't mind participating in ministry with the church. And that's how we're looking at it. So
I would even echo that. That's really the Holy Testament. It's retweeting. It's reposting. It's here's what Jesus said. I'm going to tell you. Pass it on to the next person. Pass it. I mean, it's the same. I think it's the same thing. It's just a different medium.
Right. Well, when it comes to technology in general, and just social media specifically, the perspective, because it's different. You know, it's a new thing. It's a new way to evangelize. It's a new way to reach people. You know, there are different perspectives that people have initially until they get full understanding of what you're trying to do. Yes, sir.
How do you avoid, with the call to action, how do you avoid becoming spammy or coming off as spammy?
Good question. We don't do it all the time. So usually we might put a call to action. If we send out, I'd say, 20 posts, I'm only looking at 10 to 15% where I'm putting a call to action in. So absolutely. Good question. 10 to 15%. Yep. So I'm thinking a typical week, I normally might put a call to action in 3 to 4 posts in a typical week. All right, continuing on. Now, let's talk about the rise of visual social media. And that's what we've seen with Facebook timeline and Twitter photo albums, the backgrounds, Google Plus cover photo, even with just Pinterest and Instagram and Vine and all this new stuff. We're seeing social networking is being built around visual social media, multimedia, photos, videos. Photos are getting so much more higher ranking in Facebook newsfeed. You share a photo, it could go viral much easier than other content. Video is the most engaging content, the fastest growing engaging content on the internet. And we see that video is quite engaging, and the video gets high rankings in Facebook news feeds and stuff like that. So that's what we're seeing with the rise of visual social media. And then again, entire networks being built around video and photos. We didn't look at YouTube as a social network initially, but that's what it is. And it's built around all videos. Pinterest, of course, was photos first, and then they allowed videos on a little later on, and now it's all photos and videos, but that's all it is. It's a whole network built around visual media. Instagram now would add the video features, so it's not, in addition to being visual, it's mobile. And then, of course, anybody use Vine? Anybody see Vine? You tried Vine out?
No.
Yeah. We haven't used Vine for ministry yet. Personally, I think Vine is hilarious. I use it to watch comedy. And I've spent hours watching comedy on it. I think that is great because you have to get to the point. You got 6 seconds to make me laugh. And that's, I mean, I think it's great because you really, you have to get right to the point and make me laugh. I love it.
You haven't found like a viable ministry use for Vine yet?
Teens. Not yet. But I think, you said teens?
Teens, dude. Instagram and the Vine, like my kids post Facebook.
And you know what I like that answer about that is we haven't found a reason to use Vine because we're looking at it from an adult perspective. And that's exactly what it is. Because when I'm sitting in a room thinking about it, it's just me and more adults, and we're like, we like to laugh at it, but we didn't understand how to utilize it just yet. And the more I watch it, the more I get it. But again, if we had a teen in the room, we'd have got it months ago.
It's the 6 second aspect of mind that gets me.
Yeah.
How do you communicate? I mean, I have a hard time communicating the things I need to communicate in a video that's 2 minutes long,
let alone
cram it into 6 seconds.
They say teens have 8 seconds.
See, and that's the thing. That's what I totally agree with. If we ask a teen, how would you want to tell somebody how much you love Jesus and you got 6 seconds? I think they come up with 10 ways to do it. I think they literally could. And so that's what I like about it. Okay? And then, another thing with Facebook Timeline that we utilized is we were telling our story. We looked at our Facebook fan page and we wanted to make it more interactive. Of course, the whole premise of Facebook Timeline was to make your Facebook page more interactive. So we actually went back and started telling the story of the ministry. We looked back at, and if you look over here, you see where we talked about when the pastor was born, when the church was established, when the pastor and first lady got married. And we put pictures and videos for all these particular events so that when someone comes to the Facebook fan page, they're able to look at the story of the church. And that's one of the best parts about Facebook Timeline, you know, from a personal perspective and, a fan page perspective, is you can tell your story. And that's what you should do. Definitely let people see the story of your ministry, how to get started. You know, people want to know, where did you come from? How did you get to where you're at? You know, it's great that we're a large church now, but the stories that we know from the beginning are just wow. That I've heard. I mean, as far as when the pastor talks about where they came from, it's like I don't know. I didn't think y'all was gonna make it. You know, I mean, the way that, you know, the stories they told, it just didn't look like they were gonna make it. So, which is a great, you know, it's great to see where they've came thus far. Okay, and then likewise, we talked about Twitter. Let me jump ahead to Google Plus, real quick, before I jump back to Twitter. How many of you guys using Google Plus for ministry? No? Okay. And that's to see what I like about Google Plus is the one thing that I've noticed is, as far as it being a social network, ghost town, not good at all. But as far as it for its SEO purposes, it's brilliant. Google authorship, allowing you to take control of your content. Google giving preference to the stuff that's on their network in their search engine results is very good. And that's something that we should look at from a ministry perspective, as far as putting the same content out that we put on Facebook, just push it on out to Google Plus as well. And you can do this with Hootsuite and Buffer as well. But when you're pushing out the content to Facebook, just push that same content out to Google Plus, so that when people are searching for stuff in Google, which is the front door to the internet, they'll be able to see the content coming from your church much higher in the rankings.
Jason,
yes, sir.
Are the SEO benefits good even if you don't have people plus one them, or do they even still be plus one on this thing?
They do, and that increases it. That helps with the results. But just having the content there, searching as having it there now, because this Google Plus is still early, that's the benefit of it. Of course, as it grows, then they'll make it, you know, where you have to do more to get higher because there'll be more of a content pool. But right now, that's where they're at.
So it'd be less likely you get penalized by a Penguin or a Panda update if you have more stuff on Google Plus connected to your website.
There you go. Exactly.
Y'all went too far into another four ranking to make sure
that's the first. Sorry, guys. Like on May 22nd, Google changed their algorithm on how they generated search results.
Right.
And
they did this all for a year.
Yeah.
They do.
That was like the 22nd update or 18th update. They call them weird names like Panda and Penguin. That might have been Penguin.
I think that was Penguin.
Well, I had 5,000 hits on a pizza website every month. And it's been going up every month for 10, 12 months. Boom, right away. Lost 60% of my traffic.
Yeah.
I mean, for no reason. I mean, I have a pizzeria director with the rest of my top 10 list, all pizza themed. I mean, I don't know what in the world I was doing, but there's all kinds of those people that do social media websites that got penalized too. I have no idea. I don't know what I did.
Well, a lot of people and that's the thing. A lot of people is not necessarily what they did. Google changed the rules, so that's what it is.
So you guys have SEO staff as well.
Say that one more time to hear that.
You have a search engine optimization guy on staff that's just trying to figure out how to make it pop up.
That's me.
Okay.
Yeah, because think back. I was hired to do web stuff.
Okay.
So initially, this is just what I showed them that I could do as well. But yeah, that's me. So I'm just giving
it. The rules, what do you do for SEO? I mean, if SEO rules change, if everything's Google, you can't make everything Google centric. I know that. You've got to have links being different from Facebook and everywhere else.
We just look at more of a diversifying. Yeah, where our results are coming from. Obviously, we do pay attention to Google, and we know they're going to change the rules. But the more we diversify it, we don't take as much as a hit as other people do.
Right.
So that's exactly that's how we focus on.
See, we use, at our church, we use Google. I just did this, just switched over our entire infrastructure to Google Apps, nonprofit, which is completely 100% free. They give you 30 gigs shared between your email and your Google Drive. Throw everything on there and share it out. You can keep it completely bundled up. We use Google Plus and Hangouts for staff meetings and Google Docs for notes. And I mean, it's all right inside the Google Plus.
Yeah, and that's what Google wants. Obviously, they want you to get inside their walled garden, so to speak. But the benefits, of course, is Google gives you as many tools as possible to be successful. So that's good. And then, of course, the whole cloud computing concept, you know, where everything's online, anybody can access from anywhere, speaks for itself. All right. So let me keep going because I want to be respectful of everybody's time. We talked about as far as Pinterest. So just to give you an idea of what Pinterest looks like. And then, of course, Instagram. Now, here's the thing that we want to focus on is... Again, pushing this different content out to these different sites. Whether it's text or links, these are the good sites that we focus on. And this is how we look at stuff. And I throw in LinkedIn here because we just started kind of pushing updates out to LinkedIn, kind of filling it out. That's what we're doing. We see that people try and connect with the ministry on LinkedIn. Again, from an HR perspective, they're looking to work with the ministry. But we're kind of testing out if we pushed out devotionals into LinkedIn, what type of response will we get? So that's where we're at. So that's why I put that in there as well, because LinkedIn has a stream. But these are the networks we go to when we have a text or link. We just, you know, plugging it into these networks, photos, these networks, video, these networks, and then of course with the most recent addition of Instagram video, that would be on video as well. Speaking of. I like the fact that Instagram allows you to import video, so which is something they've recently allowed you to do, so that you can take videos that you've already made and then cut them into 15 seconds, I believe it is, and push them out. So that's something that originally, you know, we were looking at Vine, but we didn't know how easily we'd be able to take videos on the fly and push them out on Vine and stuff like that. But again, we just needed a teenager to educate us. But with Instagram, we do have quite a bit of video that's custom made already in the can, and so we can push that out to our Instagram audience. All right. And then next, Instagram, of course, 100% mobile. We're talking about mobile social media now and the benefits of that. Vine, 100% mobile. Twitter uses 50% of Twitter users are mobile. 488 million users on Facebook are mobile, and 33 million users are on Foursquare. So this is the thing that when I'm talking about social media, think about it that there's quite a few people that are accessing your content from their mobile devices. So yes, sir.
Is there anything you guys have stopped posting on social media wise? I mean, that has come out since, you know, like,
MySpace. And MySpace is the best example of. yeah, that's true.
How do you go about determining what you're going to stop doing?
Because it's based on what Hootsuite and Buffer allows us to. And maybe, well, I'd say Hootsuite. I don't even jump into Buffer yet, but Hootsuite. If Hootsuite stops supporting LinkedIn, then we're not going to LinkedIn to post every time. We have one place we push out, and whatever that funnel lets us go to, that's our strategy.
And basically, the idea is that they're deciding on the back end and what's trending and what's not.
Who?
Hootsuite.
Hootsuite. Oh,
they say,
yes.
We're not going to do this anymore because it's trending down and it's losing market.
Yeah, that's what I believe. They're looking for the most ROI, of course. Now, when we're looking at is our audience, for us, it appears no matter where we post to, which network, the audience continuously is growing. We haven't seen any negative, ROI, I guess, for business terminology, where we posted to something and now there's nobody there. You know, even with Google Plus, I mean, we have a following on Google Plus that's about 4,000 or 5,000 people, for our Google Plus page, and they're more active than I thought they would have been. So, you know, outside of Google communities, I don't see people interacting on Google like that. So that's what we've seen a little more so. Yes, sir.
How do the stats about mobile versus the desktop full sites affect how you frame your content or what you put in your content?
Ah, good question. Now, specific example for that when we post something, we don't use thumbnails. Specifically because what we learned is you get higher, it's seen by more people, specifically on mobile, when there aren't thumbnails in your posts. We try and post text as often as possible, as often as we can. If we're posting, say, service is starting, tune into the live stream, put a link, and instead of, you know, people like usually want to put a thumbnail underneath and all that stuff, we just keep it with text and a link and stuff like that, because what we found out was our audience that was not on smartphones, and I'm talking about these older phones, and usually there's our international audience that are in third world countries. They're looking from phones that may not have the capability to have the smartphone features that we're used to seeing. So we saw that if we keep it as simple as possible, then we reach a larger audience. So that's what we saw some of the time. So we look at some of our posts and we do that. Of course, we post videos and photos as well, but we paid attention to how often we're posting just text stuff because we're seeing that that had the highest audience.
Do the text have links in them?
Yes, sometimes. But sometimes we post stuff that we know.
As much as you say text one.
Text is number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, text is number one, no matter what.
Would that affect, like, if I was just reaching just like a local audience, like an Appalachian, where if the mobile would be people on their iPhones or on their laptops, would that affect?
No, see, that's different because, you know, with the smartphones. Well, first and foremost, text is going to reach the most people, just no matter what, a regular text update. Then text with a link in it is what I'm seeing is what we have is that our number two reaching as far as that. But what changes that is how often it's shared when you put in multimedia photos and videos. When people start sharing that, which they do a lot more than regular updates, that's when we see that type of stuff get higher results in most people. But nothing tops our devotionals, straight text. Nothing tops that type of the audience we have with that.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely. You have a question back there, my friend?
Feedback mechanism. Are you just strictly using electronic feedback? You're looking at the sites and seeing how many hits you're getting and stuff like that? Or are you doing any, you know, research within the church itself as a whole, like just polling them and saying, hey, do you check this? Do you do that? And your friend, I mean, are you with me?
Yeah. Oh no, we use of course we have our analytics and the stuff we have with our social media properties, stuff like that. The actual time when we poll our audience and stuff like that is usually every week in service. They talk to them about what we're doing and stuff like that. We don't send out polls as far as, you know, how are we doing and stuff like that.
I guess on a visitor card it say how'd you hear about us?
Oh yeah, they do all that. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Week in you're in service during the week.
If you get that data back and say, well, man, we're hearing a lot of people hearing about us on Facebook, we're hearing about us on Instagram, like new people,
yeah.
I guess is my question.
Yep.
Okay.
We get that. And what we've seen is for us it's about 40% to 60%, I believe, which is kinda large, but that's the last thing I heard. 40% to 60% see us, and this is through the properties I work with, so that's web and social media or mobile. see our specific church before they step in. That's where they introduce to us, or that's where they connect with us first.
You guys doing live tweets? Like,
yeah.
Hashtags from the sermon and stuff mm-hmm. like that?
From our church account, and then our internet church has a Twitter. You saw the thing yesterday, the Twitter feed yeah. next to it. Yeah, we do all that.
What about social media? I didn't see YouVersion. Where you guys fall on that?
YouVersion, we use that. The link on our internet church site, there's a Bible that we let you click on, and that is a YouVersion Bible we pull up. So we do like YouVersion.
You guys are doing like the whole live, YouVersion Live, where you do all the sermon notes and all that stuff?
No. Just just to the Bible. Yep, absolutely. Okay, and right now it's 4:50, so we're a little over time. If you all want to stay, I'll continue to teach, but... if you all want this PowerPoint presentation, then it is on my site at ichurchmethod.com/ACU Summit. And yeah, that's it. ichurchmethod.com/ACU Summit. And you can, I believe there's a survey there. And I just ask about this, what did you like, what didn't you like, et cetera, about 3-4 questions. And then you get a link to download this PowerPoint slide. And the other one that I talked about yesterday, and then the one I'll do tomorrow.
ichurchmethod.com/ACU Summit.
Oh, iChurch Method. Oh, both of them work, but I just use ichurchmethod.com. Yeah. Absolutely. Huh?
That's something we didn't talk about, securing domain names and stuff like that.
We didn't talk about that yesterday, did we? No, we sure didn't. We'll definitely have to talk about that tomorrow. Okay, well, I'll keep going. And like I said, if you guys... you know, if you have somewhere else to be, I have no problem with that. Absolutely. So, actually, let me ask this first. Who all is going to be able to stay and who needs to go? Because I don't want to dominate your time. I want to be respectful.
Okay. So, continuing on. So, we're looking at which network is the best. That's the question I get asked a whole bunch of times. And, again, it depends on your church content and the capability to use the network. But, really, the answer for which network is the best is whichever network your church knows how to use. I've seen churches that are Twitter phenomenal. You know, I've seen churches that are Facebook amazing. You know, so we originally started as Facebook only. You know, we had Twitter. Nobody really knew how to use it effectively, or nobody took the time to learn how to use it effectively. So we just focused on Facebook only. Facebook, and then Twitter. We figured out, you know, the best ways to use Twitter. We grew Twitter, and then we just, you know, jumped to the next network and so on and so forth. So, but again, the best network is whichever one your church knows how to use, whichever one you have the capacity of your staff to handle, and whichever one you're seeing that your audience is utilizing the most.
Okay. You've seen churches that are like really great at Twitter, really great at
yeah.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Do you have to know offhand, like, what some good ones to would be that I can go and check out
for Twitter?
Yeah, for Twitter and Facebook, I can just like go and look and see how they do things.
Oh, absolutely. Here are two good examples. One, if you look for Facebook, I would say go to like the way we use TD Jakes Ministries. Look at the stuff we post and really mimic that, because we put a lot of effort to that strategy. Twitter, Fellowship Church in Grapevine, and they are FC. I think they're at FC. But Fellowship Church was one of the best churches I've seen that utilized Twitter, and Saddleback. Mm-hmm. Saddleback uses Twitter quite well as also. Now, the ones that I've seen that have the largest followings that I don't think really utilize as well, especially on Facebook, and we say Twitter as well. I follow Joel Osteen and Joyce Myers, and they have huge followings, but when I look at their social media, Facebook and Twitter, it's not a motivational quote. I don't see anything at all, which is great if I'm looking for motivational quotes. It's terrible if there's anything else. Like, you're not responding to anybody, you're not putting out any type of other content. It's just motivational quotes, which sounds like, you know, I could watch TV to hear that all day. So that's the only thing that I realize that it's not just about the numbers, you know, it's about the connection, it's about being social. And those are the examples I always use when I say they have huge numbers, but they're not connecting with anybody. They're trying to change it up, and it actually looks really awkward now that they're changing up, you know, 1 million people or 2 million people in,
But at least they're trying, so that's a good thing. But those are good examples for you. All right. Now let's talk about specific social media strategies. When to post? Good time to post is the morning. Then you look at an afternoon one, and these are all local times. Late afternoon is a good one. Evening, and then overnight. This one we figured out on accident. All the rest of them, you know, we kind of figured, you know, these are when people, you're trying to look at when people's attention span is most relevant. If you can't see it in the morning because you're getting to work and you're trying to get your day started, then maybe you can check out, you know, Facebook or Twitter in the afternoon. Some people, you know, they work hard all day. You know, the job restricts their access, so they look at the late afternoon or drive home. They're looking at their phone, trying to drive as well, stuck in traffic, not safe at all. Evening. We got you know, people that can't access it at work, or people who are logged in after the kids go to sleep in the evening. So you're looking at some type of post around then. And then overnight, what we found out, I happened to try an experiment with the church, and I said I'm going to repost the daily devotional at night. And I thought it was going to be the people who didn't see it during the day were going to be able to see it at night. Well, that happened, and then I totally forgot that we had an international audience. I forgot about the international aspect of social media altogether, and Europe. Africa and the other Europe, Africa, and Middle East, those people were responding the most at overnight here, which obviously is the middle of the day there. So that was real good for the international audience, because they're seeing the same things that the other people, our domestic audience, is seeing throughout the day, and they were happy about that.
You're posting the same thing over and over again?
Just one, just the devotional. The morning and overnight were the same.
Okay, so you put something in the morning, something else afternoon, something else that afternoon.
Yeah, a good example would be in the morning, you know, daily devotional, start the day off. Afternoon might be a midday link to an event or something. Hey, we got a conference coming up, men's conference. Make sure you come to the men's conference. Late afternoon or evening, we're looking at posting a video. It might be a YouTube video. Hey, this is a motivational message from the pastor. Here's a clip from this week's service. You know, check it out. The highlight reel, 2 minutes. Or we might put a whole TV show up there, and then overnight the devotional goes back. So that's what we do for that.
So you don't repost a whole lot of content.
Just the devotionals.
Okay.
Just the devotionals. Now
you're putting up enough stuff that you're not getting lost in the feed.
No, not at all. Now Twitter we might though, because we obviously with Twitter, you know, we know that so if somebody doesn't see it particularly at that minute, that moment in time, then you know, it's gone. They don't have anywhere else to go look for it unless they come specifically to the Twitter page, which a lot of people don't do. So we might repost stuff on Twitter more often. Okay? Now, social media strategy, again, continuing, Facebook or Google, post at least 1 to 3 times a day. Twitter, post at least 4 to 6 times a day. This is this type of guidelines we're trying to look at. YouTube and Vine, at least 1 video a week, as well as Instagram. Pinterest and Instagram, at least 1 photo a week. And Foursquare, post 1 check-in special per month. We didn't talk about Foursquare, and that's one thing that's a huge opportunity that churches are missing. The check-in specials and communicating with their audience on Foursquare. You have to use Foursquare, I believe it's Claim Your Business on Foursquare. So, and make sure you put your Twitter account in there. So when people check in, it puts your Twitter account in their feed, so that people know they such and such checked in at, you know, Grace Baptist Church, and then your Twitter account comes up as well, so that is tagged in that post and stuff like that. Then you want to give them a special to check in, a reason to, you know, some type of incentive to check in, so that it'll also continue to showcase their friends' news feeds that they're checking in at your church. So you want to make sure you utilize that. And again, this is all free. So what we do is we tell them if you check in, then go to the bookstore and you give them a free CD or something. You know, whatever CD we normally give away for free, we make sure that the check-in people get it first. Okay?
Because we've tried to use Foursquare before at a previous church I was at, and that was my biggest hiccup. Because I went to Chili's and I'm like, hey, check in, get a free, you know, free bowl of chips or something.
Right.
That's stinking awesome. How do we utilize that in church?
Yeah.
I just kept coming up to, because we don't have school, you know? So, you know, in that situation, you know, you want people to be using Foursquare, and Foursquare is not as popular as it used to be.
Right, true.
But it still has an online presence. So what? That's the big hook is.
Well, what about a download then? That's what I would do.
You know,
to give away something free, I would look at a download.
Okay.
And when you're setting up the check-in, you know, when you say, hey, you know, usually I might try, because they give you a place to put in the coupon code or something, whatever you're supposed to give, and I just, you know, I put in a free download as well.
Okay.
Click on this link and we'll give you a free download, and so on and so forth. So that way, it, again, because I told them, you know, when they were talking, we were throwing out ideas, they were like, well, give them a free CD. I'm like, well, I'm not as young as a teenager, you know, in my mind I am, but I don't want a CD.
Yeah.
Where am I going to play it? You know, I don't have anywhere to play it on purpose.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was thinking I need something digital, and my kids, you know, they're not going to ever know what a CD is.
Yeah.
So what can we utilize that we can give them that? And then, I don't know, I'm like, I know you guys pay like 10 cents a CD, but we don't have to even pay that 10 cents. You know, for digital downloads, it's free.
Yeah.
We got the server space, we're paying for it. Might as well use it.
Have you ever experimented with any, like, non-tangible incentives or things like post you to get mentioned or have your post published here? I don't know what other type of things, but not giving away something, but like giving some sort of opportunity or...
No, we actually haven't, and that actually would be really good. We didn't realize how important or how much people wanted to be recognized, you know. I mean, social media is obviously in itself, we really should have understood that because it's quite a vain tool. But when we retweet people or mention them on our Facebook page, that's like everything to them. And I didn't even think about that, but that's something that we talked about and then we didn't come back to it. But that's a very good idea.
I was just saying, like, I don't know, like, classes and stuff, it's like, fill this form, and they make one of those charts with, like, the most words that are put back or the biggest, you know, talking about,
mm-hmm.
like, that word that's huge, and, like, the little words are the ones that someone only says once.
Yeah.
What?
Tech class.
Yeah, tech class. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that, that's a good idea. Yeah, we're gonna do that one because I like the fact that just acknowledging people. It's everything to them, you know. So appreciate that. Okay. Is that somebody knocking on the door?
I don't think it's on purpose.
Oh, okay. Cool. All right. Well, let's keep going then. Again, and first, always analyze, optimize, repeat. So here are some of the tools that we use to analyze, optimize, and repeat. As far as analyzing our strategy, optimizing it to make it better, and then repeating what we did before, you know, to see get better and more efficient results. And the one thing I don't have in here is Google social media analytics, where they're giving you the analytics of how many people came from social media sites. Well, what social media sites they came from to your site, and that's a very good tool to use because it measures your the effectiveness of your social media strategy and driving them back to your website if you have any links that are coming back to your website. And so that's one thing that you have to make sure you do when you're putting out your social media posts. So specifically, we're looking at it for our live stream. We put out on Twitter, we put out on Facebook, come watch our live stream, and we look how many people actually respond to that and come to it. And that's stuff that we want to make sure we're analyzing.
So are you guys, 0.3 Facebook Insights, are you guys using any of the Facebook ads, utilizing any of the paid per click kind of stuff?
Yeah, we use promoted posts and we use ads.
Okay. How much, this is a stupid question, I just asked percentage wise, of your online media budget, how much do you put towards promoting and
now,
Facebook ads?
I don't know the entire media budget, because it's pretty high.
Sure.
I can tell you what we spend on ads. And that would be, last ad I think I saw the spend was $3,000 for that particular ad. And we probably run probably about four ads per conference. And then I had one ministry I worked with that spent $10,000 on an ad to increase their fan base. And they got 30,000 of fans.
Okay. So do you see that as an adequate use of that money?
As far as the ads, yes. Well, actually, it depends. To grow your fan base, paying for it, I guess so, because, I mean, it's all advertising and marketing.
And is that one of the cheapest forms of advertising that you can do outside of selfless, you know, selfish shit. I'm sorry. Selfless, self promotion, shameless self promotion, where you're just out there, hey, you know, grandma, grandpa, will you retweet this for me?
Yeah. I think it is one of the most inexpensive. Google ads and Facebook ads are the most, and Twitter ads are the most inexpensive ones I've seen as far as that, just in online marketing tools.
Okay.
Facebook boost this post on Facebook.
Promoted post, yeah.
Is that good? I mean, how effective is that?
That's quite effective. And then the main reason it's effective is, you know, a lot of people use them to target people. But the best part about that is if you have a fan page, it'll when you do a promoted post, it goes to the friends of your friend of your fans.
So the more fans, is there a threshold on when it should be? Should you have 500, you know, likes or 500 friends before you use it? I've seen people that have like 125 friends and they'll post something on their personal or on a business page, and it just doesn't really do any good. They say they make it just doesn't do any good for them. But then I talked to a guy out here. He has like 650 friends, and he boosted something, and he'll end up, you know, getting a lot of even new donors, you know, for his ministry work. I mean, so is there a threshold? Have you noticed it?
No, I think there's not a threshold that I've seen. It's the content. So what I've seen, because again, I've seen a bakery that had maybe 128 fans,
okay. But
the video they made that cake looks so delicious that they got a huge response. Plus, it was a good deal that they were giving with
the sales.
Yeah. So again, but even and in it, I've seen small churches that have made. You know, they may not have put. They only have a limited marketing budget, but for some reason, they had somebody in ministry who made a really good video, or a really good image. I've seen imagery as well, but that is what pulls people in, and they got a lot more fans. So it really, to me, the content is what drove it. And again, they didn't have a lot of money, so they couldn't really use an ad as much to get the type of results. But a promoted post was good for them because, again, the friend they had real loyal fans, and those friends were ones that became new fans.
On Facebook, didn't it used to work where someone on your timeline that's a follower of yours that likes your page and they like something, didn't it automatically go to their friend? I mean, didn't their friends automatically see it?
It used to. They used to do that.
They changed that this year.
Yep.
Permissions.
So now the only way you can get them to go like that is to pay for it.
If you get them to what?
To get it on your timeline where your friends can see it. The other people. The people that follow your...
Oh, if you like the page to see for other people to see it? Yeah.
The only way is to do is pay it now?
Yeah.
Or if they open their permissions on their end. Like there was that big switch when they did it all and everybody's grandma went on there and changed all the permissions.
Yeah.
So that nobody can post it.
Yeah, so the main thing now is, of course, the reason Facebook did that is, you know, they jump out and they say, well, for privacy concerns, you know, we'll make it so that the permissions are more controlled and stuff like that. But again,
stock price.
It's the money. Yeah, it comes down to the money. Because now if I get you to pay for it to show everybody that, then we've made money that we wouldn't have made before.
Exactly.
So, and that's what the goal is. So, make as much money as possible. All right. Now we're talking about social media and websites, and we talked about this yesterday, and I'll reiterate this again, but adding your social media sharing capabilities and all that good stuff to your website increases your social media traffic and so on and so forth. So letting people like your page while they're on your website, letting people share your content on your webpage to their Twitter family or Twitter Twitter fans, Twitter friends and stuff like that, but letting people share your content from their right from your page is a way to increase a lot of your social media traffic. And that's one thing that you know, churches understood putting the icons on their websites, but they didn't understand how to be able to share the stuff right from their page, because it took developers before. But now with tools like Share This and Add to Any, you don't need a developer to go in and code it and all that stuff, or a geek to make it happen. Yes, sir.
For like church websites or something like that, do people usually go to church website, go find the Facebook page, or see the Facebook page and then go look for the church website?
Which one happens more often?
Or is there a trend in the progression from one to the other?
Oh, yeah, the progression now that I've seen as of recently is social media first, then website.
Now, originally, obviously, it was a website first, and then, you know, you fan out. But people are now going to social media first because they're connecting with, you know, whomever, their family and friends. And then from there, they're seeing the people they, you know, the brands they connect with or the church they connect with there as well. And then from there, they go to the site. But, again, statistically, there isn't a large amount of one over the other. It just seems like it's trending more towards social media and then everything else.
All right.
Okay. Except for, if we're just going to throw it out there, except for e-commerce, which we'll talk about tomorrow. Except for e-commerce. E-commerce and social media is not mixing as well as they thought it would be. Like putting stores on Facebook and stuff like that. They thought that was going to take off. F-commerce is what they were calling it. They thought that was going to take off, and it didn't take off. Actually, Pinterest is driving e-commerce more than any other the social networks, and that's still clicking and going to the other site and stuff like that. So,
as long as it's pinned correctly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so and that's so again with the social media, that's the tool you use for that. Lastly, we're talking about the Google Hangouts, and that was some of the things I think you were talking about earlier with Google Hangouts.
Yeah.
And Google Hangouts, I mean, just that tool is for me. That's what's keeping Google Plus alive, and you know, outside of the whole SEO aspect of it. But Google Hangouts is what's making Google Plus one of the top tools, especially now they've added you can do Google Hangouts from your mobile devices, any device actually. And no matter what the person is on, everybody has a seamless integration and a seamless entire hangout, which is actually really good. And then they record it on YouTube, let you live stream it. It's a really innovative tool. So what we looked at was we saw five ways that churches can use Google Hangouts on air. And then, of course, we saw streaming your sermons, your Bible studies, interactive Bible study, which was really good. They even added a Q&A feature into Google Hangouts just 2 days ago. Which is good. Interactive counseling sessions. So of course those are not, you don't want those to be public at all. But you know, if the wife is somewhere at work and the husband's at work and the pastor and they all want to talk, they can come into a Google Hangout and have their heated fellowship there in that session, and hopefully it all works out. And then, you know, special events, conference previews, webinars. We use this a lot for webinars and online trainings and special events. If we're having a conference, the pastors or all the speakers at the conference will come together and they'll talk about the conference and their topics at the conference. And then they'll push that video out as kind of like a, here's a taste of what you're going to get at the conference. And then the best part I like was podcasts done quickly and easily, because you can record, you can do a one-person hangout. Or if you want to just, you can record it and it'll, you can talk about whatever you want to talk about. They'll record it on YouTube, give you the MP4. And you can push that out through Podbean, which is the tool I talked about yesterday, and you got a podcast done. So that was actually really good.
You said that was that's recent that they've done that?
Which one?
That they've allowed you to download the...
This, no, as soon as they did Hangouts on Air, then you could download the MP4 from YouTube. Yeah, absolutely. They've been let you do that. But it's only, is it 360, 480? I think it's the 480 quality.
Okay.
So not HD yet.
And would that be the same thing if you were to do your... stream your sermons or whatever, be low quality?
Yeah. But they're getting better because they just introduced HD Hangouts on Air, which is in beta, so you can test that out. So of course, if they introduce that, then they're going to eventually let you, you know, record that in HD. So that's good. But of course, Google wants to have all the content, so you record it, they have access to it, because I'm sure, you know, you download it, they're keeping it on server somewhere in the cloud, and they have everything, which is... iRobot is coming true. It's happening. It's happening. Okay, so what's coming in the future? More integration to our lives, where the lines between offline and online will blur. So again, we'll share more with our offline, share more of our offline online. Case in point, Google Glass. Take Google Glass, add in the social media aspect, and now you have somebody who's sharing their life continuously from their perspective through their glasses. And they just let you, originally Google Glasses, you had to have some type of Wi-Fi connection or to connect, but now you can do it through 3G because they let you connect with your phone, but you go around a tethering plan. So
they built that.
No, actually, it's not a hotspot. It's something with, because I thought it was hotspot too. I'm like, well, that's just Wi-Fi connect to a hotspot, but it wasn't that. It was going around a tethering plan, and I don't know if it was a Bluetooth enablement or something, but either way, it's
It's connecting to straight to the 3G through your phone, but not using Wi-Fi and all, because that's the battery drain.
Yeah.
That's what they were trying to circumvent. And they got it working.
Cool.
So yeah, really cool. So social media will help websites and our web usage to customize the web to us. So now when people come to websites, they'll be signing in, or people will be able to track them via their social media properties to different websites. And, you know, we'll think that they're customizing the site for us, and we can sign in with our social media tools, which we do now, but that'll be a tracking feature. And that's what Facebook does now. And then of course, digital missions. This is a new concept. I've spoken about at a few churches where ministries focus on niche networks around the world and develop strategies to reach members on those networks with the gospel. So basically looking at reaching people in these remote areas that may, they have access, internet access, and we're trying to figure out how to reach them utilizing social media and technology and stuff like that. So online digital missions. Okay? And that would be everything, my friends.